A bill making its way through Wisconsin's legislature lets pharmacists prescribe birth control pills and patches, not just dispense them, but prescribe them. We're talking about why some lawmakers support the move, who could benefit from the change, and the drawbacks that some critics see. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the State Capitol Report, and you can join this conversation. Do you think pharmacists should be allowed to prescribe hormonal birth control to people 18 and over? If it becomes law, would you take advantage of that option? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Joel Kitchens is a Republican state representative in Wisconsin's 1st Assembly District. That includes Door and Kewaunee counties, plus areas of Brown and Manitowoc counties. Kitchens is from Sturgeon Bay. Representative, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's start with a broad question. Why do you think it's important for people to have access to birth control at pharmacies, not just at a doctor's office?
Well, I think it's just so much easier for women to access birth control through pharmacists. We have a number of counties that don't have an OBGYN, and the studies show that it's like 93% of women in Wisconsin have a pharmacy within 5 miles. Hormonal birth control is extremely effective when it's used properly and consistently. And one of the biggest reasons for failure is that, you know, women, they run out of prescription and they can't get in to see their doctor, or they go away for the weekend and forget their pills. So I think anything that we can do to cut down on unplanned pregnancy is really important.
Well, and you've described this bill as being pro-life. I mean, we often see anti-abortion policies not really going in hand in hand with easier access to contraception. Help us understand, you know, how you see this playing a part as a pro-life measure.
Well, we know that 43% of unplanned pregnancies end in abortion. So, you know, clearly it will reduce the number of abortions. And I think if you look at the states that have done it, Oregon has done it for the longest period of time. So that's the only state that we really have figures back on. But it has cut down on abortions there. So, you know, I certainly view it as a pro-life measure. Yeah, I understand that there are certainly people that don't agree with this approach to it. But from a practical standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world.
What are your colleagues saying? Do they agree with you?
On the Republican side, most of them do. You know, it passed through the Assembly. There were some that voted against it. But overwhelmingly, I think they do support it. The leadership within the Republican Party on the Assembly side, they all signed on as co-sponsors. So I think it's got good support. And the Democrats almost all voted for it when it was on the Assembly floor.
Let's circle back to the idea about safety, because I do think that enters people's mind anytime we're dealing with medication, even over-the-counter medication. Hormonal birth control generally considered safe, but research is finding that it can have some adverse side effects. Are there risks in taking doctors out of the equation, and how are you trying to account for those?
Well, the way the bill would work is that a pharmacist would give out a questionnaire, a screening, as well as taking the woman's blood pressure. And if there are any red flags raised by that, then they would be referred to their doctor. I could go on and on about why I think that it's safe, but I guess I'll let the medical community speak for itself, because virtually every major medical association, including American Medical Association, the Wisconsin Medical Society, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American Academy of Family Physicians, they all believe that it's safe enough to be over the counter without any screening whatsoever. So I think the safety, I mean, every drug has some bad side effects. I mean, aspirin can cause bleeding, but especially doing the screening, I think it's perfectly safe. There are over 100 countries already where it's over the counter with no prescription at all.
Yeah, to get a prescription under this proposal, women fill out a medical questionnaire and also have a blood pressure screening. Take us through the circumstances in which it would be acceptable for a pharmacist to prescribe birth control pills or the patch.
Well, first off, I think the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists would work together with the Pharmacy Society in coming up with a questionnaire as far as what they think the pertinent questions would be. You know, blood clots are probably the major risk in hormonal birth control, but that can be screened for. And the new formulations of birth control you know, have far lower hormonal levels than they had in the past. So there really is not much of a risk if people are aware of that. So yeah, they would go into the pharmacy, fill out that questionnaire, get the blood pressure screening, and if there were no red flags, again, they would, you know, be able to buy the pills at that point. You know, the OBGYNs tell me that that's virtually what they do already. You know, they don't do a big workup on women when they prescribe birth control.
Joel Kitchens is a Republican state representative, and we're talking about legislation that would allow Wisconsin pharmacists to prescribe birth control pills to patients. And you're part of this conversation. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We're wondering, you know, do you think it's safe for pharmacists to prescribe hormonal birth control, or should that prescription come from a doctor? If the proposal becomes law, would you take advantage of it? Go to a pharmacist instead of a general practitioner or a gynecologist? Or maybe, you know, if you've overlooked something, as Representative Kitchens has said, and you're out of town, would this be a good option for you? Or maybe you're a pharmacist. What are your thoughts on this proposal? Do you feel comfortable prescribing hormonal birth control? 800-642-1234 is the number to call and voice your opinion. You can also email us at ideas@WPR or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Representative Kitchens, we do wonder, some anti-abortion groups have said that this proposal might encourage premarital sex. It could increase the chance of abortion. How do you respond to that sort of concern?
Well, I think if you look at the numbers and, you know, and the data on that, that argument just doesn't hold water. You know, we have our abortion rate in the United States has declined pretty substantially over the last 10 years or so. And the Center for Disease Control says that is almost entirely due to increased access to birth control, because the rate of abortion, that 43%, that stayed the same through all that period of time. So really, it's access to birth control that has reduced the abortions in this country.
So you're saying that the numbers back up the idea that access to birth control can actually help prevent unplanned pregnancies, not encourage people to act irresponsibly.
Right. I think that's a... I just don't think that's a realistic argument that women are going to go crazy, you know, if they have access to birth control. There's no data to back that up. And going back to what we talked about before, too, we don't want to take doctors out of the equation as far as women's health is concerned. You know, I think every woman should have a relationship with her doctor and you know, have the testing done that's necessary. But we're dealing with the real world here where, you know, there's so many women that just don't have that relationship and don't have access that, you know, that's the reason this is so important.
Yeah. And you've talked about the fact that increasing access to contraception is something that can help with the pro-life movement. Do you see pro-life politicians thinking shifting toward this, or is this something that seems to be happening just here in Wisconsin?
No, there are about, I think there are 13 states now where this has been adopted. And again, within my caucus in the assembly, I think probably everyone is pro-life, but the majority of them think that this is a practical way to reduce abortions. You know, and even amongst the pro-life or the pro-life groups, it's only the most extreme groups that view contraception as, you know, abortion, basically.
Sure, because even if life begins at conception and people agree on that, if you prevent conception, then you're not destroying life. Is that the concept?
Yeah, it is. And mm-hmm. And honestly, there's also a misconception out there that people think that hormonal birth control blocks a healthy embryo from implanting, and the science does not back that up.
It prevents
fertilization.
Gotcha.
So even if you take that stance, it still doesn't hold up. You know, there's no scientific evidence whatsoever that modern birth control prevents implantation.
Thank you. We're talking with State Representative Joel Kitchens. He stays with us as we continue our conversation about the potential for pharmacists in Wisconsin to provide birth control. I'm Keely Boltina. The State Capitol Report continues right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Here in Wisconsin, people who want birth control pills need to see a physician or an advanced practice nurse, like a nurse practitioner. Some lawmakers support adding pharmacists to the list of healthcare providers who are allowed to prescribe hormonal birth control to people who are at least 18 years old. We're talking about it here on the State Capitol Report. What do you think? What questions do you have about the plan? 800-642-1234. In general, do you think pharmacists should have more freedom to prescribe, or does the system work well the way it is? Again, that number is 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. State Representative Joel Kitchens is talking us through the legislation. It has passed the State Assembly and is headed for the State Senate. Let's go ahead and bring Kate into the conversation. Kate is a nurse practitioner. Welcome to the morning show.
Thank you.
What did you want to say? What's your perspective in this conversation?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I think pharmacists should be able to prescribe and have access, allow access for women for additional health care options. They're great providers that I truly believe are underutilized. They're so knowledgeable. My only concern is, one, making sure it's a great questionnaire, not only leading disorders within the patient, but also the women, but also in the family. And another one is migraine headaches with auras. Last, I think it's real important that we educate our public that it's not just a doctor's office, it's a health clinic. Planned Parenthood prescribes, of course, as well as other providers as nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, and physician assistants. So I think that having access, and there's one last thing I just forgot, making sure that on the questionnaire, their last pap smear, 3 or 5 years, and if there are concerns for STDs and their knowledge, we're actually using long-acting reversible options such as IUDs, but you know, that's a visit. So if they can get into a pharmacist, that would be great. And thank you for this legislation.
Kate, thank you so much for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. State Representative Joel Kitchens, Kate's a nurse practitioner, has some really tangible things that she thinks we should flag maybe, but thinks overall it's a good idea. Is this similar to what you're hearing?
Yeah, it is what I'm hearing. You know, the Pharmacy Society of Wisconsin, they're very supportive of this. It is optional. You know, if a pharmacist is not comfortable with it, they do not need to participate. But I think, you know, as a group, they're very supportive of it. And I think she's right that and that's why we're going to have the professionals write this questionnaire for them to capture all of those possible, you know, risk areas. And as she said, with the pap smear and all that, we do not want this to mean that women shouldn't see a doctor for all of their other needs. But this, I think, does provide them a very good option.
Yeah, I do wonder, though, you said that a pharmacist, if they're not comfortable participating in this program, would not need to. Would that make access, would there be disparities in access then if certain pharmacists would be willing to participate and others would not? How do we account for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I think at first, when we've looked at what other states have done, at first people are a little bit timid entering into the whole thing, and for women, too, to get used to the idea that they can go to a pharmacist instead of having to go to a doctor. So I think there will be a little, you know, it'll take a little bit of time for everyone to get comfortable with it. But I believe that the vast majority of pharmacists, once they get used to the idea, will embrace it.
Let's bring Steve from Sun Prairie into the conversation now. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm probably more pro-life than I'm not. I'm not 100% pro-abortion, but I'm not 100% pro-life. And I just don't know of any pro-life group that is against this bill, considering that it seems like most Republicans are supporting it. I want to know which groups, other than religious groups, which they have a religious, you know, reason to do it, what legitimate groups are against this bill? I mean, most pro-life, they're not anti-abortion, pro-life people don't want to see pregnancies that aren't wanted.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for that. I do know, Representative Kitchens, that the anti-abortion group Wisconsin Family Action had voiced concerns for the proposal because of those religious and conscience rights of pharmacists. Was the bill amended or has that been resolved?
No, I don't think there was any need for that. Again, we've always had it in there that it's voluntary. As far as the groups that are opposed to it, yeah, Family Action is opposed, Pro-Life Wisconsin is opposed to it, and then the Catholic Physicians Guild. So those are kind of the only groups that we heard from. And, I respect people that have a moral objection to birth control. I just don't think it's our job as legislators to be trying to impose our morality on others.
Yeah. you know, sex ed isn't required by law in Wisconsin. State law does require that if schools offer those programs, they should emphasize abstinence, among other things. And some research has found that focusing on abstinence can be correlated with higher teen pregnancy rates. Do you think comprehensive sex ed should be the norm in Wisconsin, you know, as kind of a partner to what we're talking about here with greater access to birth control?
Well, you know, I think educating young women is important. I don't want to get into whether we should be mandating that within schools, but I think education certainly is important. But the abstinence only model clearly does not work. It's, you know, half of the pregnancies in Wisconsin are unplanned. So I think we just have to accept reality that model is not going to prevent these things. And when you look at the dire consequences of these unplanned pregnancies, it makes no sense.
Joel Kitchens is a Republican state representative, and you can join this conversation. We have a few moments left, 800-642-1234. Do you think pharmacists should be allowed to prescribe hormonal birth control to people ages 18 and older? You can share your thoughts. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. Representative Kitchens, in the past, Democrats have proposed a bill that's similar to yours. The Democratic version, though, didn't have that age restriction on who could get a prescription. Why is it age 18? Why did you make that call?
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of people that are uncomfortable with the idea of taking parents out of the decision. So, you know, from a practical standpoint, politically, had we not had that age restriction, there would have been no chance that it would have passed. So, you know, so that's where we are with it.
So if this were to move forward and then it's 18 and it were possible to prescribe to women who are 18 or older, if it was a political decision in the future, could you see yourself supporting something that would expand it below 18 years old for the good of teen pregnancy concerns or something like that?
You know, I think that I could personally. I don't speak for my caucus on that. I think there are an awful lot of people, though, that would not be comfortable with that. And I think it's probably, you know, a good idea. We can start with this. And, you know, if down the line, you know, it needs to be changed, that's fine. I mean, there are also other forms of birth control, like injections, that, you know, when Oregon did theirs, it was like ours. And then later they added that in. So, you know, this is a step and we will see how it goes. Hopefully we can get the Senate to take it up on the floor and get it passed.
Sure. It's about, you know, collaboration and working together. Let's bring in Susie from Sauk County here. Susie, what do you want to say in this conversation?
I would like to know why the responsibility and even the right of a woman is secondary to a man's responsibility and such. Because why? Why can't they wear condoms? You know, whether they're rapist or not, or, you know, or whatever, or taking advantage. Why is it they can't? You know, why aren't condoms accessible to guys and it being pushed so that they are used to them and things like that? That is par for the course.
Okay, Susie, thanks for that. And Joel Kitchens, maybe this puts hormonal birth control more on a similar level to something like male contraception, like condoms, because it eliminates an additional step of having to go to a doctor or a nurse practitioner and make the time and find your way there. If you're able to get a prescription from a pharmacist, is that something that we might be able to think about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it should be. It should depend on the man and the woman, as she said. But, you know, condoms are available. You know, if they're in the grocery store, even you can mm-hmm. purchase those. So they are readily available. But the female contraception is not nearly so available. So, you know, and unfortunately, the unfortunate reality, I guess, is that more often than not, the woman is the one that bears the brunt of an unplanned pregnancy. So I do think that it's very important that, you know, female contraception is as available as male contraception.
Representative, I just wonder, now this has passed the Assembly. You are a member of the Assembly. Now it goes to the Senate. What do you think the chances are that this proposal will pass with your Senate colleagues and then become law?
Yeah, the tough part is going to be to get it scheduled on the floor. I mean, it's been through the Senate hearing, and I'm very confident that we have the votes to get it passed out of the committee. The challenge will be to get it on the Senate floor. If it makes it to the floor, I'm sure that it will pass very easily, too. But unfortunately, with our caucus system, sometimes, you know, a small minority is able to block things. So, you know, that will be the challenge. And for anyone out there listening, if they want to contact their senators and urge them to get this, you know, scheduled for a floor session, that would be great.
Representative, we really appreciate your time breaking this down for us today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Joel Kitchens is a Republican state representative from Wisconsin's 1st Assembly District. That includes Door and Kewaunee counties, plus areas of Brown and Manitowoc counties. Kitchens is from Sturgeon Bay. Up next, it is news. Then the State Capitol Report continues with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation's secretary appointee. She'll tell us about her priorities for business and labor in Wisconsin. And we also want to take a moment to thank everyone who contributed during our year-end member drive. More than 1,100 of you joined in to support the programs that you rely on. Independent journalism, handpicked music, and great conversation are possible thanks to member support. If you missed the drive, it's not too late to join in with your year-end gift today at WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. The State Capitol Report continues here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This morning on the Ideas Network, join us for live coverage as the House Judiciary Committee takes the next step in the impeachment inquiry. Coverage begins at 8. Attorneys for Democrats and Republicans on the Intelligence Committee are testifying about evidence against President Trump. And that conversation begins at 8 o'clock right here on the Ideas Network and online at WPR.org. Right now, it's the State Capitol Report, your Monday window into state policy and politics here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with the leader of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You are part of this conversation. 800-642-1234. What do you think of tax incentives for private companies like Foxconn? How do you want Wisconsin to attract younger workers as other people near retirement? What do you want to know? Ideas at WPR.org is the email address you can use. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Missy Hughes is Secretary Designee and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which goes by WEDC. She previously spent 15 years as General Counsel with the Dairy Cooperative Organic Valley. Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Keely.
We're going to start with Foxconn. You said just in the last few days that Wisconsin is in, so you're hopeful the state's deal with Foxconn can work. How do you plan to make sure it's right for Wisconsin?
Well, we've been working really hard to open up communications between the new administration and the new leadership at Foxconn. In the last 10 months, we've seen, obviously, the changes with the administration and the state government, and then Foxconn has also gone through new leadership changes. And so we've really opened up communication so that we can understand what the project is all about and we can understand what Foxconn's visions are for the future.
And yeah, how have those leadership changes affected that partnership? Have you had to start backwards a little bit?
No, I don't think backwards. I think more understanding that Foxconn's in an incredibly dynamic marketplace. And so wanting to know that they have a vision for the future and that Wisconsin can be on board with that and understand what their plans are.
And what do those conversations, those plans look like right now as Wisconsin's government and Foxconn are working together?
Foxconn's vision for the future is really based on smart technology. And this concept, the best way to give it is an example. So if we're going to have self-driving cars, if there's a universe where we have self-driving cars in the future, we need to have technology that supports that, not only the hardware in the cars, but also the software, the data that goes that's involved with understanding, you know, all the variables involved in self-driving cars, the communication network in order to make sure that we're in constant communication with those cars, and the artificial intelligence that's needed in case, imagine if there's a storm, and how we manage the cars on the highway. So there's a whole long vertical pipeline of technology, and that's what Foxconn is thinking about. And in the Wisconsin Valley, the concept is that Wisconsin would be the center of that for the United States.
So there would be this additional intellectual property component, technology component to the LCD factory that it had promised to bring to Wisconsin?
Well, right now, Foxconn is building a 1 million square foot facility that's more focused on the smaller hardware that might be used in hospitals or in cars. And they have not yet committed to the full LCD plant because they're seeing lots of competition from other areas on that. So that's one of the reasons we really need to be in communication with them, is to make sure we're aligned and understand what their project is so that the state government can support it, but also make sure that we have transparency and accountability for the Wisconsin taxpayers.
Right, because the deal to bring Foxconn to Wisconsin involves incentives, tax incentives. Do you think that those government incentives are a sound strategy to spur economic development here?
Well, it's funny, you know, coming into this position, what I love about Foxconn, surprisingly, is that it's opened up a conversation in Wisconsin about what we really want to have as far as economic development goes. Because we have this enormous project happening in southeast Wisconsin, we also have the opportunity to say, what else do we want to be doing across all the 72 counties, in rural areas, in urban areas? What kind of economic development does Wisconsin want to be involved in? Because ultimately, this is the taxpayers' dollars at work. And so where do we want them to put to work? And I think this has really given us the chance to say, you know, those Main Street programs that WEDC does, the community development programs, the support for entrepreneurship and innovation, those are also really key parts of economic development. And what concerns me sometimes about the Foxconn conversation is we spend so much time talking about it that folks who might have interest in access to our other programs don't even know they exist. So one of my real goals coming into WEDC is to make sure that we're talking about things other than just Foxconn.
And certainly we will make sure to do that today for sure. I do, though, want to ask, you know, the deal with Foxconn is a give and take, right? If Foxconn isn't meeting its benchmarks to get the incentives, and then Wisconsin then isn't getting what it needs from the company, are you open to renegotiating the agreement with Foxconn?
I want to make sure that the project aligns with what the state is expecting and what Foxconn needs for support in order to be successful.
Okay, so that may or may not include some sort of renegotiation or kind of figuring out what the ground rules are?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Missy Hughes leads the state's Economic Development Agency. It's now known as WEDC. And there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of partnerships between private businesses and public groups? Small business owners, what do you need from the state to feel supported? What do you see as your biggest obstacles or opportunities? Join in now at 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Missy, you've been with WEDC for 2 months now. You were previously general counsel for Organic Valley. That's a billion-dollar dairy cooperative. Tell us a bit about the work you did there and how it translates to your position now as CEO of the Economic Development Board.
Well, I actually had two roles at Organic Valley. I was general counsel, which involved making sure that legally we were protected and we thought about our contracts and our work with other partners. I also was chief mission officer, and my role as chief mission officer was to make sure that our mission as a cooperative of saving family farms now and into the future was always first and foremost in how we did business and how we worked with each other. So what I was able to do with the cooperative was bring farmers together. So the farmers are the owners of the business. Farmers all across the country. We have 2,000 family farms in 36 different states. And I was able to bring them together for conversations about how to go to market, how they wanted to work together. So I think I can translate that stakeholder conversation into my work at WEDC. WEDC has an amazing array of stakeholders, whether it's the legislature or the governor or the taxpayers, and then, of course, the businesses all around Wisconsin and the people who have ideas for doing business in Wisconsin or want to open a shop or want to make sure that their main street is vibrant. So bringing all of those stakeholders to the table so that we can make sure the investment we make in Wisconsin's economy is worthwhile. So that's a little bit my skill set, I think, is getting people to talk with each other and find common ground.
After announcing your appointment, Governor Tony Evers said that the goal is to grow an economy that works for everyone. Wow, if that isn't a pretty big task, I'm not sure what is. I mean, how do you see that happening? How do you plan to jumpstart that and keep the momentum?
Well, I think when the governor speaks about everyone, he's talking about traditionally disinvested communities that aren't able to access traditional financing, or where in rural communities, developers aren't always willing to be the first ones to put a shovel in the ground. How can we make sure that those folks are participating in the growth of the Wisconsin economy? So when we talk about everyone being involved, that's all the stakeholders, right? No small task is exactly right. But I think making sure that our programs are accessible, that folks feel like they can participate with their great ideas and bring them to fruition.
Let's welcome Frank in La Crosse to the conversation now. Frank, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for taking my call. So good luck in your new role. I'm concerned about under the previous administration, there were several instances of either bad record keeping of some of these loans or grants, and either misuse by individuals or corporations of some of the money for either like personal uses or not creating the jobs. So what's the status and what are you doing to project a future?
Right. Frank, thank you for that question. Missy, how about, integrity in the process of the loans and things that come through WEDC?
Yeah, I really appreciate Frank's question. Since I've come on board, I've learned about the transition from the Department of Commerce to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation that happened about 8 or 9 years ago at the beginning of the Walker administration. And the concept there was to create a public-private entity to have more flexibility and be more dynamic and more responsive to the businesses that are coming to Wisconsin. So fast and furious, WEDC was stood up and started working, and the systems and processes have been built slowly but surely over the last 8 years, with a real focus in the last 3 years or 4 years under my predecessor, Secretary Mark Hogan. And Secretary Hogan did an excellent job of really making sure that the procedures and policies were in place to assure transparency and accountability. So I actually feel really good about where we are as far as integrity and accountability for the taxpayers' dollars from a tactical viewpoint. You know, where is that money being spent? And are we being sure to make, the proper verification when a company says they're going to create jobs? Are we going back and making sure that that's all verified? And those processes are in really good shape. I'm fond of saying that the car engine is working really well. And now collectively, we need to decide where we're going to drive the car.
We're talking with Secretary Designee Missy Hughes. She leads Wisconsin State Economic Development Organization here on the State Capitol Report. There's still time for your questions and ideas. Are you in manufacturing? What do you see? What are the biggest issues you face working in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 is the number you can call. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. In manufacturing, Wisconsin lost more than 5,000 jobs between August of 2018 and the same month this year. That's according to the Federal Department of Labor. And we're talking about jobs and economic development here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Keeley Boltina, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. What questions do you have about creating work and fostering economic growth in Wisconsin? Are you in a Wisconsin city, a small town, or maybe a really rural area? What does your part of Wisconsin need? 800-642-1234. Give us a call at that number or email ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Secretary Designee Missy Hughes. She's been leading Wisconsin's Economic Development Organization for the last 2 months. And Secretary Hughes, Wisconsin did lose those several thousand manufacturing jobs. Do we know what economic forces might we blame for those losses?
Well, I think the important thing, first and foremost, is to keep in mind that Wisconsin actually has 475,000 manufacturing jobs. So while 5,000 is a big number and, you know, certainly something we want to keep an eye on, we also want to be thinking about manufacturing in a holistic way in Wisconsin. There's just a ton happening with conversations around manufacturing. And I've been in the process of learning all the different aspects of manufacturing that we have in Wisconsin. We have big companies like Oshkosh Trucking and Kimberly-Clark that are involved in manufacturing, but we also have tons of small mom-and-pop tool and die shops and precision manufacturing that's happening all around the state. So there's a lot of different components. Of course, one of the big conversations that I always run into is this question of making sure that we have enough people to do the jobs. So even while we're seeing a loss in jobs, we still have a real struggle with population decline and aging population in the state. And so we want to make sure that we are preparing the workforce that we have to be able to do the work of advanced manufacturing as the companies adjust to making sure they can still grow while they have, you know, a struggle to find the people for the jobs.
And what is the role the WEDC plays in finding people, preparing people, and kind of matching skills and workers to the jobs that are available?
Well, we have a couple of different roles. One, you know, very tactically, we are trying to help connect businesses with students and businesses with folks who are looking for jobs. So we just launched an internship module online with the help of the UW system. And what that internship module does is it helps a small business who thinks they might want to have an intern connect with a career services office at a UW system school and find that intern who can come and work, you know, for the summer or the semester, and then, you know, hopefully create a relationship with that company and stay there for a long time. So that's one of the super tactical things that we're doing. We also have a big marketing campaign that comes under the umbrella of WEDC. And with that marketing campaign, we're talking to folks who might be interested in moving to Wisconsin. We're also talking to veterans all around the state, all around the country, who need to understand that Wisconsin has lots of jobs available, that Wisconsin has a great quality of life, and that they can bring their skills as they're leaving the services to Wisconsin, and we'd love to have them. So those are some of the ways that we're helping to connect businesses with employees.
We're talking with Missy Hughes here on the morning show. She is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, WEDC. And we're talking about jobs and economic development here across the state of Wisconsin. Secretary Designee, you know, this is the explanation we're giving people because you are still working as an appointee, even though you're leading this organization. And the Senate has the opportunity to confirm or deny you as secretary. How is that affecting the way that you are operating and leading this organization?
Well, so every appointment has to go through the Senate confirmation process, and I'm no different as far as that goes. I've been meeting with all of the senators as best I can. I think I've had 16 meetings up until now. I've had my committee hearing meeting. So it's really been actually very interesting in that concept of having stakeholder meetings to sit down with the senators and understand what are their concerns and what are their hopes for WEDC. So, you know, insofar as how has it been affecting my work, I'm still learning all there is to know about economic development in Wisconsin. And the senators have been really helpful in bringing to me the interests of their districts, but also their concerns and hopes for WEDC.
And this is the State Capitol Report. We often acknowledge the politics of the situation. We have a legislature that has Republican control. We have an executive branch. A Democrat is governor. How are you balancing those relationships in working with lawmakers, but also working with the governor?
Well, I have a sweet spot because everybody wants the Wisconsin economy to succeed. And so I'm able to have conversations with the legislatures and with the governor about how we can make that happen. And one of the reasons the governor brought me on is to try to make the bridges between these conversations and find a common path forward.
And is part of that common path then, you know, looking at the millennials in the workforce, looking at the job disparity we have here, and trying to come up with solutions, I guess, that, if possible, makes everybody happy?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. It has to be because every business is concerned about it in Wisconsin right now, and therefore every legislature legislator is concerned about it. The governor is concerned about it. So it's a focus across the board. My hope is that we can find a more cohesive way of approaching it. There's lots of different efforts in classic Wisconsin style. Everyone is inventing the wheel to try to fix this problem. And I think that there's a real opportunity for cooperation and working together and bringing those resources together so that we can solve these problems together.
And the flip side of that then is trying to figure out if the work that you're doing is successful. The Economic Development Corporation, you say, you know, we're going to assess how this is working, how we measure success. Right now, we often talk about it determined by the number of jobs that are created. Is that how you see figuring out whether your work is successful, or are there other ways to gauge that?
Well, I think one of the real challenges with the job creation metric is we're solving for a problem that we don't necessarily have, right? We're creating jobs, but we don't always have the people to fill those jobs. So what is the real opportunity that we want to solve? What's the measure of success? And I think if we can collectively determine what that measure of success is, then we can have that metric, whether it's quality jobs, whether it is making sure that everybody has a chance to participate, bringing folks who are currently in custody or folks who aren't participating in the economy into the workforce. I think there's all sorts of different measures of success that we can think about, and job creation might not always be the top one.
And what might people who don't work in this every day not realize about this these relationships between public authorities, I guess, and then private agencies when you work together? What do we need to know more about?
Well, since 2 months ago, I didn't work in this every day.
Fair.
A couple of the things that I've really learned is there is a really thriving economic development community in Wisconsin. Every city, every county, every village has somebody who's thinking about economic development. So if you have an idea or you're looking for resources, you just need to ask around a little bit or come to WEDC's website and we can help you find somebody who can help you think about your idea and vision it forward. So that's one of the pieces that I've really been excited about as I've learned about economic development in the state. The other piece that I've really been impressed with is the deep collaboration between strong businesses in Wisconsin and the public entities in Wisconsin. So we have an amazing education system, we have an amazing industry base, and we have a government that can tie those all together. So I think connecting the dots between the industry and education and the government is a key towards success.
Secretary Hughes, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gilly. I appreciate it, too.
Missy Hughes is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDC. She previously spent 16 years with the dairy cooperative Organic Valley. That does it for this edition of the State Capitol Report. Just ahead, it's live coverage as the House Judiciary Committee takes the next step in the impeachment inquiry. That starts at 8 o'clock. NPR's live coverage will take you through the public impeachment inquiry hearings this morning right here on the Ideas Network and also online at WPR.org. You're listening to The Morning Show.